Today on the Nerd Outcast podcast, we discuss more Batman. Welcome back. I'm your host, Chris Bashan, and today's topic is Batman and other media. If you happen to listen to a previous podcast, we discussed Batman and comic books, and tonight we're going to try and hit a bunch of different things from Batman on television to Batman in film to hopefully Batman in video games. As is common with this format, I have brought on two experts to help me discuss The Dark Knight, and we'll go on and introduce them. My first expert to my left is...
Mark Soloff!
Hello, Mark!
Hello, thank you for having me again.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
You're sporting a fancy beard.
I am. I don't have much respect for the way I look, and so I'm just letting it all grow out.
That's great.
Which Batman can't do, otherwise he'll look real sloppy.
Can Bruce Wayne grow a beard?
Ooh, that would be a great way to disguise his identity if Bruce has a fake beard and Batman is clean-shaven.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. My other expert for the evening is...
Patrick Sweetman.
Hello, Pat.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Excellent, thank you.
You have, so far, I think, been in on all of the superhero discussions.
I have a penchant for superheroes.
You do. There's nothing wrong with that. I greatly respect you for that.
Oh, thank you.
And as is also common, I usually invite what I like to call outcasts, people who are not as familiar with the topic or perhaps do not like the topic at all. Of course, who would not like Batman?
Only a villain.
Only a villain. My first outcast for tonight is...
Joel Thompson.
Hi, Joel.
Hi, Chris.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
So before we get into any discussion, I want to learn a little bit about... my outcasts here. So my first question to you is: you're familiar with Batman, right?
Yeah.
Now, would you say you're like a big fan of Batman, or
not particularly? I mean, he's fine as a superhero.
Do you like superheroes?
I do like superheroes.
Okay. Were you a comic book kid?
No.
Okay. Well, who's your favorite superhero?
Nightcrawler.
Oh. Okay. All right.
Is it because he's German?
That and Catholic.
So are you an X-Man? X-Man, just one. X-Men fan?
Yes. Okay. I'm much more of a Marvel than what I am a DC.
Okay, so you're not coming into this very blind. You're familiar with some of the stuff we're going to talk about
tonight.
Some
of the stuff, yes.
Okay, I'll be curious to see what you think. And my other outcast for tonight is...
Andrew Kudla.
Hello, Andrew.
Hi, Chris. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You are a first-timer to the show.
I am, yeah.
That makes me so happy.
Woo. Yeah, me too.
Woo! Yay! New time. Yay!
Fresh
another,
me.
Another listener.
Don't listen.
So that's all right. So let's get a little history with you. Are you a comic book kid? Were you a comic book kid?
No. Okay. No, I was not. And I'm starting to try to be. But yeah, that's about it.
Okay. How are you starting to try to be?
Oh, God. Well, I did a handful of seasons of Buffy, and now I have a comics consultant. Her name is Sarah. I'll tell her to listen. And so you will have more people.
Great.
Just not me. And then now I'm starting X-Men.
Great. Oh, nice.
I'm just curious about this comics consultant. What exactly does your comics consultant do for you?
She's ordered my comics prioritization. So she just gives me 3 or 4 volumes at a time, and then I have to digest them. So she's very aware of timelines and is very, very supportive in making sure that I don't cross over into anything I shouldn't.
Is this a professional position? Can anybody start this business?
Yeah.
Not yet. I don't pay her. Except in love.
It's a labor of love.
Yeah.
You know, if it makes you feel better, I'm hoping to do a Buffy episode sometime.
Ooh, that'll be exciting.
Yeah.
Side note, to introduce that, my friend just interviewed Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Ooh.
Uh-huh. And told her, or said that she wasn't that fun. Wasn't that great. In fact, quite rude.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Wait, Sarah Michelle Gellar told her?
Sarah Michelle Gellar was rude.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know you thought Sarah Michelle Gellar told my friend that she was rude.
Yeah.
No, Sarah Michelle Gellar was rude.
Aw. Yeah. Well, I'm deflated a little bit. I'm sad now.
I'll never stop loving her.
Well, let's bring it back to Batman. Like I already said, we talked about Batman in comic books. So if you guys don't know this, Batman is billionaire Bruce Wayne. He goes around.
What?
What? He goes around. I know. He goes around fighting crime. You guys know that, right? You know that general story? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Sometimes I confuse it with Newsies.
Okay. So let's go back in time. We're going to do this chronologically as best I can. To the 1960s, Batman, starring Adam West.
The greatest Batman ever.
Ow. So I'm pretty sure I could say none of us were alive and saw this on the air at the time. Unless one of us just looks really great.
I can say it, but I'd be lying.
Okay. Let's kind of approach it like this. All right. Mark.
Yo.
Have you seen the 1960s Batman?
I have seen some episodes.
Initial thoughts?
Well, initially when I saw them, I thought they were lame.
Okay.
You know, I liked Batman in the comics, but I thought it was very silly and campy, and I didn't appreciate that. And honestly, now as an adult, I really haven't pursued the Adam West Batmans out. I think it's difficult to find copies of it. I feel like they don't sell it. Now, I might be totally wrong, and I'm sure the internet will correct me. But I haven't sought it out because it is a Batman that is different than the Batman I love. This Adam West Batman is very, very PC. He's very family friendly. He has no real dark issues that he struggles with, and it feels very safe and very silly. And I like my Batman to be gritty and serious.
Okay, Pat, have you seen this?
Oh yeah.
What are your thoughts about it?
I love it for what it was. I mean, I grew up with it. Obviously, I wasn't around when it was initially on, but when I was a kid, it was replayed a lot on, you know, like the UHF channels and stuff at the time. This is before everybody had cable. And so, yeah, I grew up, I saw all of them, and then later on, the awesome Batman movie with Adam West. But, you know, it is what it is. It's very kitschy. It's very time period. Yeah, it was 66 to 68. It very much had that flower power thing going on. And even Batman in the comics at the time was very kind of weird and strange. So not probably as bad as that, but it was definitely its own thing. So it's fun to watch. It's cheesy. Mm-hmm. But
I thought it lasted for a much longer time.
No, yeah, it's only a couple years.
Well, I mean, I did a little research on this. It did only last for 3 seasons, but it would air twice a week. So they have actually 120 episodes, which I think is a lot.
It was
at the time.
And 3 Catwomen.
Yeah. 3 Catwomen.
Yeah, how many did they have? They had Eartha Kitt and
Julie Newmar and then one other.
The thing, well, before we go any further detail into it, Joel, Andrew, are you guys familiar with this?
I'm familiar with it. I've seen a couple. I don't think I've actually ever sat down and watched a full episode. I've seen bits and pieces of episodes, but that's about it.
Okay. Andrew?
And I know some of the characters.
That was the only contribution I can make. How long did it last? And Eartha Kitt.
All right. Perfect. You know, it's funny, Pat, that you mentioned that you felt it kind of, like, comic books were weird at the time. According to some of the stuff that I read about this, this style of Batman was actually very contradictory to what was developing in the Batman comics at the time, because Batman was coming out of its campiness and was heading more into what we would know as the Dark Knight. But
the TV producers wanted to stick with the campiness.
Yeah, yeah. They call it specifically pop art camp comedy.
I can see.
And they were kind of trying to model it after the old serials, where they would have an episode that would end on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And then a resolution episode later in the week. I've seen a couple of these, and gosh, man, like, it always ends on the worst type of cliffhanger of, like, being over a tank full of sharks or at Saw on fire coming down. I mean,
and
like,
usually with a really bad pun.
Oh, yeah.
And you also get the on-screen questions. Will Batman survive this? Yeah. How will the Cape Crusaders get out?
You know, I don't remember Batman, even when he was really early in the comic books, being as punny as this show is.
Oh, no, this show set the bar for puns. I mean, yeah. Well, the other thing is, I saw the show before I got into reading Batman comics, which, you know, in the 80s and, you know, 90s, obviously it was taking a much darker turn and stuff, which totally contradictory towards this. So as a kid, when I was like 10 years old, this was great.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Like, even as a kid, I don't know. It didn't strike me. I felt it was trying to be like a cartoon. And I thought, well, I can go watch cartoons. But I was also kind of familiar with Batman being a little edgier at the times, because I think I saw this when the animated series was coming on, and I know I saw it after Burton's film. So,
you know, and that's the thing, is that had already kind of predisposed you towards a certain Batman.
Yeah.
In the early to mid 80s, when I was a kid, it was the Super Friends cartoon, and so that was still a little cheesy, not as cheesy as the Adam West show, but they were, you know, at least close enough that you didn't have the dark brooding Batman, and
You know, I think Adam West voiced Batman in the Super Friends. He didn't?
I don't think so.
I thought he voiced him in one of the shows.
They did a couple of different incarnations.
Oh, if only there was some way to look this up. Andrew's trying to discreetly... For those... No one can see you, Andrew. No one can see what you're doing.
Well, what if I made too much noise?
You're fine.
I was so nervous.
You're fine.
You yelled at me about
now,
that.
Now, a problem that I have with the Adam West Batman, or two big problems. Number one, it kind of popularized Batman as this neutered... You know, colorful, silly character. Hey, old chum, let's go and fight crime. And that's not my Batman. And I mean, everyone is up to, they can have their own interpretation of that character. But I personally prefer him darker.
I wonder if it's even close to what Bob Kane really wanted. I don't know how much input Bob Kane had on the whole Adam West series.
No idea.
I would have to... Okay, yes, that it's not as darker and gritty as you want, but at the same time, though, if Chris's information is correct, and the comic books at the time when the Adam West was coming out were getting towards that grittier stage, those grittier stages, then what came before it was all this kind of, like, I don't know, happier punny or stuff, I guess, if you will. So now the television then is imitating the art, which is getting a bunch of more people involved in Batman, and now they're going to go read Batman and get into that grittier stuff. So by having that, you might have created more Batman fans by having it being punny, oh, what is this? And then they go find out and then become fans of the grittier Batman.
That's a good point.
Man, he just put you in your place.
You've been schooled by the Outcast, dude.
Uh-oh.
The Outcast won.
I now must wear the mask of the Outcast. So, my second big gripe, I'm a huge fan of the Joker, and I've said this on the previous episode. Like, I love that character, and...
I love Cesar Romero as well.
When I saw Cesar Romero as the Joker...
With his mustache.
Right, he wouldn't even shave his mustache for the role.
He was too big.
Yeah, they put white makeup over the mustache, and I was like, I'm a child, and I can see that this is bull. You know, he's not even willing to shave for this? And it took me out of the reality
out of the reality of the pop up bam and wow and pow and everything.
Yeah, it's like if you have Gandalf on screen and he has black hair, and it's like, what? Oh, sorry, the actor doesn't want to dye his hair. Be like, come on, dude, it's an important character. Do it.
Yeah, but this was late 1960s. Fairly low budget TV. It was just, and that's the thing. The Batman comic books at the time weren't the giant franchise they are now. They didn't spend much time or money on these things.
And I don't think it was kind of almost similar to Star Trek. Like, it was not it wasn't a revered show. Like, Westerns were a big thing for television. So I could see for Westerns, like, oh yes, I will go out and I'm gonna change my look. But for something campy or something sci-fi, it's like, I don't want to sink my career, so I'm not going to commit wholeheartedly to it.
And at the time, having like Cesar Romero, that was a get for them, and he probably, he had his regular career. He's like, I'm not shaving my mustache. The show's not big enough for me.
Yeah.
I think also who else they had. They had Eartha Kitt, Julie Newmar, Meredith Burgess.
Burgess Meredith,
I'm sorry. Oh, Burgess Meredith. He was awesome.
Who was it that played the Riddler? It was...
Frank Gorshin?
Something like that.
He was a Pittsburgh actor, which I am aware of because I'm from Pittsburgh. I want to say Frank Gorshin. I'm not sure if that's right. Internet can be angry at me and correct us.
I think some of these actors went on to do really good things. I know specifically Adam West had a very hard time finding work.
Yeah.
It's interesting that some, like the others, other people aside from Robin and maybe Gordon, the rest of them, like the villains, I guess, if you will, all went on that we know them in other things, whereas Adam West.
Mm-hmm. Well, this was Robin also one of Adam West's big breakout roles. Had anyone else, like the other actors, had they been established up to this point? Does anyone know that?
I'm not sure. I know some of them, obviously Cesar Romero, but I'm not sure about like Burgess Meredith and Vincent Price as Egghead.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh, they had great villains. King Tut? Oh, yeah.
Well, one thing I will say, I remember the Batman movie where mm-hmm. four of the villains, the Joker, yeah, the Riddler, the Penguin, and
Catwoman
team up. Yep. And I thought that was amazing. And it also gives us the line, there are just some days you can't get rid of a bomb.
There are.
Which is awesome. That whole bit. Even as a kid, I thought that bit was really, really funny. When he's trying to get rid of the bomb, and then he sees a marching band, and he can't throw it there. And he sees a boat of passengers and whatever. He can't throw it there. Then he sees some ducks crossing the street. And he's like, oh, I can't throw it there. And it's like, he just can't get rid of a bomb.
I've right? actually seen that episode.
It's there. It's I don't know yeah, actually when the movie aired.
I think it was after the... I think the series may have been done on TV, okay. But if not, it was towards the end of the run.
Yeah.
I remember that bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone remembers that bit.
Yeah.
The bat shark repellent.
Yes.
The disappearing boat that just magically, such a jump cut for the film.
Before we get away from the 1960s Batman, are there any other really outrageous bits? You yes. mentioned something about a dolphin or a whale sacrificing itself.
Go ahead, Pat. You know
so
better than I do.
A couple major things we got to talk about. The awesome Batmobile. From that.
Oh, yeah.
This is true.
That's classic.
It's always running out of the cave, which is somewhere in the LA area. It's very famous. I think they shot a bunch of Power Rangers episodes near there.
Oh.
The other thing, almost every episode had the climbing up the wall.
Yeah.
With like a guest of the week opening the window and popping out saying, hi, Batman, and you know, making some jokes or whatever.
That the camera is turned sideways. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember the shark repellent where he like punches the shark off his leg. I don't remember this whale dolphin thing. Whatever.
Wait, was it in the movie?
Yeah, it's in the movie. The shark thing was in the movie. It was the very beginning. But yeah, your normal episodes, you obviously had Commissioner Gordon and Chief O'Hara. And you had the red phone, the red bat phone.
Yeah,
the
bat phone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in the movie they dehydrate like the United Nations or something.
Yeah.
And it looked like it made him turn all into Tang, which yeah, I was like, oh, sweet, I really want Tang.
But well, it was the late 60s, so it was actually Angel Dust.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, if nobody objects, we're going to move on from the 1960s Batman and jump up about 25 years to a differently entire interpretation, the Tim Burton Batman films. Because Batman was essentially not on the air for this time. I think there was some Super Friends.
Yeah, but that had been off the air, I think, since the early 80s.
Yeah.
So it had been a number of years, and Batman was, aside from comic books, there really wasn't any Batman in the media.
No, and I think you might be able to credit the Superman films for kind of rejuvenating the superhero film genre, if not creating it at all. But in 1989...
Well, the problem... Hold on, let me stop you there,
right,
because that's a little disingenuous, because really you had Superman IV, The Quest for Peace, as the lead-up to 1989.
The what?
the Superman film that didn't happen. Sort of like Highlander 2.
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm sorry. But then in 1989, the world...
I see what you did. I get it. That was comical.
In 1989, Tim Burton gave us a new interpretation of Batman, with Michael Keaton cast in the title role against the villainous Joker.
Who got head billing.
Played by Jack Nicholson. Yes, he had billing. Yeah, so let's kind of do the same thing with this. Mark, did you see this in... Did anybody see this in theater?
Yep.
I did.
Did either of you see this in theater?
I don't think so.
Okay.
What year did it come out?
89.
Oh, no.
Okay. I saw this in theater. I thought it was amazing.
I saw it two or three times in the theater.
Yeah. This I thought this was amazing.
Yes.
It was great.
Yes. The end.
The end. We're done. Thanks for coming out, guys.
We still have to go reminisce on the, have you ever danced with the devil by the pale moonlight?
Yeah.
Yes.
Some of those great classic lines.
That's very much the Samuel L. Jackson walk through the valley of the shadow of death Pulp Fiction monologue. That's the same kind of deal. I just say something scary before I kill people.
Mm-hmm. Well, so let's talk about Tim Burton's first Batman film. Initial reactions, what are our thoughts on this?
I still love it. It's highly stylized. It kind of has that gothic noir kind of thing going
gangsters
on.
Gangsters and stuff. Mm-hmm.
But that's great because that was, you know, a throwback to kind of the origins of Batman in the 40s. And yeah, there's obviously, you know, people who are true comic book aficionados definitely had some issues with some of the stuff they did in the movie. But I thought, you know, if you can put it aside, it's a very good movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that it was the right choice to set it in this theatrical, you know, 30s kind of esque gangland 80s hybrid. Because if they had just centered it solely in the 80s, where everything is 80s,
yeah, it
wouldn't have aged well.
No.
Yeah, and it wouldn't feel as Batman-y.
Exactly.
One thing I really liked about it is that, and I think I mentioned this last time I talked about Batman on here, is that it really captures this kind of romantic, like, Storm and Drung kind of high, classical adventure feel with Danny Elfman's wonderful score and all these very, very dramatic sort of shots of Batman. You know, he lowers down the first time you see him. Mm-hmm. He lowers down like some sort of supernatural thing with his cape wings extended.
He's Batman.
Yeah, and they're like, you know, I hear there's a giant bat around Gotham. And, you know, that image is just so powerful. And the bat signal, the bat wing flying through the clouds, going up into the stratosphere, like going in front of the full moon and then back down again. That's just so great.
Joel, Andrew? Any thoughts here at the beginning of this part of the discussion?
I'm gonna throw out everything I know about it right now. really liked Eartha Kitt was in it, right? I always thought that it. I liked that one specifically because I thought it was the most intellectual Batman that I'd seen. Just him watching the screen, and I think you just see more behind the eyes that you do in a lot of the other Batman since.
Well, that's funny because, you know, there was actually a lot of people weren't crazy about Michael Keaton being Batman. Still, to this day, a lot of people just don't see him because, I mean, most of his other movies are comedies or, you know, romantic comedies and stuff. He plays typically a goofier character. He's not a big imposing, you know, figure, and just,
I don't know, Multiplicity was pretty great.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was his other superhero movie.
Well, Beetlejuice was right before this, too.
Yeah.
It's funny, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, Pat. I was going to bring that up. There was a huge controversy about Michael Keaton being cast. Some other people that were up for the role included Mel Gibson, Kevin Costner, Charlie Sheen, Tom Selleck.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dodged a bunch of bullets there.
And they didn't.
Would Tom Selleck have had to shave?
Just
well, if we follow the Cesar Romero,
it's Magnum PI as Batman.
There was a huge letter writing campaign to WB and DC about not to use Michael Keaton, but it was Tim Burton who really kind of rooted for him and was like, "Hey, I worked with this guy; I think he'll be perfect." And he gave Michael Keaton The Dark Knight Returns to read to kind of study up for the role, which is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Which it would have just come out actually. Like, it would have come out that year, I think.
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know when it was published.
Yeah, I think it was 89.
I'm a bad nerd.
I thought it was 86, but
okay.
I don't know for sure.
I like the idea that Michael Keaton was bad. I mean, I enjoyed the performance anyway. I enjoyed the movie, I think. But I think having Michael Keaton as Batman makes it much more interesting because Bruce Wayne, aside from having a lot of money, is not really... I mean, he's not an imposing figure. You would never think that Michael Keaton was...
He definitely sold it.
He didn't look like it, but he was.
His Bruce Wayne was definitely kind of aloof and goofy and, you know...
Right,
They accented several times. Then, of course, when he was Batman, he was very serious and spot on. But I have to say, though, it was Jack Nicholson as the Joker that sold the movie. That took it, you know, to new heights. Because, I mean, most of the lines you remember from the movie are Joker's lines.
Well, before we jump to Jack Nicholson, let's finish up with Michael Keaton. I really like his portrayal as both Bruce Wayne and Batman. And you're right. I mean, I think he did get in shape for the role, but getting in shape, I don't think was as...
It was an 80s shape.
It was an 80s shape, and it wasn't as strenuous as, like, Christian Bale went through.
And that costume covered so much.
Yeah.
Right.
But like, the point that you bring up, Joel, it kind of reinforces that Batman has to be more intelligent to fight his enemies and, you know, create different gadgets or use different tactics, where I feel Christian Bale's Batman... While he does all those things, he is very much like, I'm going to use my elbows as much as I can. And that's really cool. But
Bane's in Gotham? I won't use any of my gadgets. Let's have a fist fight.
Hey, we're not talking about those yet.
Save it for later.
What I need to.
Save it for later. Any other thoughts about Michael Keaton?
Yes.
Go ahead.
So I like Michael Keaton's portrayal in this as well. And I think something interesting you see here that is not as much in the other good Batman movies is that he is a lovable person as Bruce Wayne. Vicki Vale, like, falls for him, and they have dinner together, and they meet up with Alfred, and he's talking about stories about when he was a little boy, and they're laughing, and he's like, yeah, Alfred's my family, you know, and you feel that close bond, and he sleeps with Vicki Vale in the film, and that's, like, that's not something that regular Bruce Wayne does a lot. At least the modern Batman is sort of like, he's like, I can't be with you because I must be the knight. You know, and so this Batman is like, hey, I want to be a person, but I also need to do this Batman thing. And he lets...
so it's not going to work out.
Right. He lets Vicki Vale in. He shows his secret identity. Or I guess Alfred busts it up.
Alfred busts it up.
Yeah. And I think it's really cool, because if he's more human, then you feel like he has more to lose. If his whole life is just being Batman and Bruce Wayne is just a mask, then... if he dies in the line of duty, it's like, well, he died doing what he felt he needed to do, and Bruce Wayne was a sham. His life wasn't too great anyway.
I feel that's something they reinforce in Batman Returns with Catwoman, but we'll discuss that in a moment.
Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, woo! Let's talk about Jack Nicholson. So you said, Pat, Jack Nicholson is what sold it to you.
Well, he sold the movie. Okay. I mean, he was just, like, you think back on most of the memorable lines and scenes, it was him. He was a scene stealer. I mean, he had those great, you know, the great dialogue and everything else. You know, it was a lot of fun. He took the Joker someplace, you know, you weren't expecting.
Yeah, yeah. People, I think, well, at least me, being like 7 years old, my familiarity with the Joker was, he's a goofy bad guy. He's going to hit you with the joy buzzer and he'll pull out the flowers in your face. And this Joker was definitely homicidal.
Yeah.
He was scary and he was funny and he was somewhat charming, but also unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such a cool interpretation of the character, which, I mean, you know, follows a lot of the comic interpretation.
Yeah.
Now, I do have a problem now as an adult watching Jack Nicholson do it, because he's pretty much being Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's a good fit,
yeah.
But I think the Joker is more than just Jack Nicholson.
Hmm. Yeah, I can see that, especially with, I don't want to talk about it too much, but like Heath Ledger's portrayal. I feel Heath Ledger went more into the Joker, whereas Jack Nicholson poured more of the Joker into him, if that makes sense. Like, Jack Nicholson didn't become the role. He let the role kind of become him. And I mean, he went to variations of himself, but yeah, I don't know. I don't think he approached, I mean, he didn't approach it the same way. Although he did make comments about Heath Ledger's portrayal and mentioned, like, you know, this is a very tough role.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to really mess you up, or this is, you know, it's going to take you dark places. So maybe he did. I could totally be wrong. I don't know.
Concerning the Joker, how I mentioned there's sort of a romantic kind of, like, higher than reality quality to this film. One thing I think is cool is when the Joker first he gets out of the chemical pit and the idiot plastic surgeon who's been like hacking away at his face unveils his head bandage, his invisible man head bandage, and shows him the mirror. And you don't get to see his face, but he just has this like, oh, and this despair, which turns into crazy, insane laughter. He shatters the mirror and he's cackling. Totally lost his mind, staggering up the staircase. Like, that kind of thing, like, oh, I'm deformed now, so I'm insane, is, like, it's a poetic and romantic thing that is totally unrealistic, but it works in Burton's world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I saw this movie when I was a kid, and the Joker scared the crap out of me. Especially the acid flower thing, and his gas, the laughing gas in this film,
yeah,
really,
scary.
Really freaked me out, especially when he's distributed among the population of Gotham, and they don't know it. Yeah, that was creepy.
There are things that, like, would you hit a guy with glasses?
Yeah.
The very end of the fight, he pulls out glasses. I mean, some of the images that you remember, like, when the Batwing is coming down, he pulls a huge, long-barreled gun out of his pants. Which, anyway.
And he just has one. He just has the balls to like just walk up to the Batwing and is like, come on, come on.
Yeah.
Right. Come on, shoot. Right. Come on.
I think that though he's once again, if we have to do the comparison, Christian Bale, Heath Ledger, they work together because the Batman was grittier than the Joker needed to be. Mm-hmm. Whereas once again, Michael Keaton, Jack Nicholson may be playing himself. I haven't seen him in quite a while, but there's no reason for him to go that gritty, I don't think, because Keaton didn't go that gritty. And if you have one that's two, then the movie wouldn't work. And I would also have to say, just on a side note, I think, was this the one where Jack Nicholson made like $50 million because
he
of the...
He made tons of money.
Yeah.
Like, Now, there have been deals like that have always been made, but this is the first time that so much money was made.
He was such a big name for the project. He was able to negotiate his work days, how long a work day was for him.
Wow.
Yeah.
And usually based around the Lakers' home schedule.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was kind of crazy. Kind of crazy. But yeah, I think you're right. I feel like this Joker is a great foil for that Batman.
And of course, another important element that really made this movie work as a whole was the soundtrack by Prince.
Oh, God.
So, come on, we got Bat Dance.
Let's move on to some of the other characters real quick.
You don't want to talk about Prince?
Andrew, you didn't. What do you want to say anything about the Joker? I want to check in with you. How you doing?
Oh, no. I mean, you guys kind of hit the nail on the head with a lot of the stuff, and it was really interesting remembering it. I always will remember the Batwing catching all the balloons.
Yeah.
That was always one of my favorites when that happened. But I really love the reporter. I can't remember.
Vicky Vale? Or
Knox.
Knox.
Yeah. Oh, Knox! Oh my God, I forgot about Knox!
Alfred, get Knox a Grant.
Yeah.
And the first time Knox sees Vicky Vale, he's such a sleaze. He's like, hello, legs! What the fuck? He's the Lando Calrissian of this thing.
Oh, God. But not nearly as great.
Yeah, totally not going to get laid like Lando
would. No, because Lando was actually the district attorney. So.
That's right, Lando was Harvey Dent in this one!
Yeah, there's a little bit of trivia about that too, but we can discuss that in a moment. Yeah, did Knox? Did that actor go on to do other things?
Yeah,
he looks
familiar.
Wasn't he Arliss? Yeah, Arliss.
What's his name?
I have no idea.
Something Wool. I forgot his
name. Robert Richard? I don't know.
All right, well, something.
Yeah, he pops up. He still does stuff.
Robert Wool.
That's it.
Robert Wool.
Yeah, he did Arliss was his big HBO show for a number of years.
I will admit I'm not a fan of Vicky Vale. I find her really annoying. And I'm glad that she's not back for the second one. There, I said it. I didn't like Kim Basinger, whatever your name is. I didn't like you. I didn't like you, Kim. I didn't like you.
Is it because she's pretty and blonde and you feel like you can't approach her?
It's
don't
because
forget she wore glasses.
It's because Michelle Pfeiffer came along later and just
and
was
she's,
amazing.
She's a damaged woman that you want to heal.
Yeah, I wasn't a big Vicky Vale fan. Like, I felt she was too much like, I'm the victim, I gotta scream.
She was
screamed
a damsel in distress.
She
was a damsel in distress.
I didn't care for it. Nope.
Would you feel better if we tied her to railroad tracks?
I feel better if Lois Lane came along and punched her in the face. This is how you do journalism.
But like the Terry Hatcher Lois Lane?
I'm not going to talk about that. do you guys want to say anything about Vicky Vale?
She was in the movie.
You mentioned something about...
She had blonde hair.
I know. And she doesn't weigh 120 pounds or whatever she tells Batman. What did you... You mentioned something about Bruce Wayne, like, pushing her down.
Yeah, that's right.
Like
I forgot about
like,
that.
Like,
there's
what
this,
was it?
The scene where Michael Keaton Bruce is like rehearsing that he wants to tell Vicky that he's Batman, and he goes to her apartment. He's like, "I'm Batman." Okay, you know how sometimes people they have lives, and then they and he's like trying to do the thing and trying to give her the speech and break the news, so to speak. And she's like, "Look, Bruce, I gotta." And she puts up resistance, and he pushes her down into the chair, and he goes, "Vicky, you're a nice girl, and I like you a lot, but shut up." And that, like, you know, as a kid, I didn't really think about it, but now that's kind of messed up. You know, that's Blade Runner kind of like, "I love you, I'm gonna push you into the wall and then make you kiss me because we're in love and you just don't realize it.
You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts.
Never rub another man's rhubarb is a life lesson from that scene. Oh,
Bruce Wayne, Nez Pas, some of the time.
Yeah, it's Vicky Vale.
Yeah, that doesn't give him an excuse to push her around and tell her to shut up.
No, that was my segue of trying to get away from talking about her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And now the next part.
There is one character I really want to talk about, and that is Alfred, played by the wonderful
Alfred.
Michael Goh, if I'm saying that right. Is that how you say his last name?
Gough.
That's
what Klingons eat, right?
This when the new Batman came out, when Christopher Nolan's Batman came out and they had Michael Caine, this was one of the roles where I was like, man, I really liked the 89 Batman.
Yeah.
I thought that Alfred. Mm-hmm. And I think that is Michael Goh. I can't pronounce his name, but I think that Alfred has a very, very long mm-hmm. career.
Mm-hmm. Goh seems right.
Goh seems right.
G-O-U-G-H for those listening at home.
Thank you, Andrew.
You're welcome.
Playing 94/7, 24 hours a day.
Delilah.
I love this Alfred. I feel he just brings so much to the character, so much to the role. And he's in all four movies, unfortunately.
Weird.
Yeah, he's the only consistent thing. But I love this interpretation of Alfred. And I don't know. He's great. When I watched the movie... The first time I ever watched it, I was just like, yeah, that's who Alfred is. That's who Alfred should be. And even we kind of skipped over it, but even the Alfred in the 1960s Batman is played pretty decently.
Hmm. I do not remember Alfred from 60s Batman.
Yeah, he's in there.
Yeah, he's in there. And also, Bruce Wayne had an aunt in the 60s.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
To make it seem less weird that he was living
with
Burt
man,
Ward.
Yeah.
Yeah, one really cool thing in the Burton Batman, there's a part when they're having like a fundraiser for Harvey Dent's campaign and Alfred is serving champagne or something, and somebody goes to put down, I think it's Bruce.
It's Bruce.
He goes to like to just like put a glass somewhere or something, and Alfred is like shadowing him, and he's like, and gets that glass immediately, and he's like fixing everything like a ninja.
Before he sets it down without a coaster?
Yeah, that's right, the coaster.
Yeah.
Batman Returns?
Oh, well, almost. There's two last things I want to talk about. A couple of design choices. I think the musical score is great.
Yes.
Danny Elfman does The Elfman.
Not the Prince.
The Prince.
Oh, come on.
Well, Prince is pretty good, too. You know what's weird? I just heard that song on the radio the other day.
Party Man?
I guess.
Or Bat Dance.
I don't know.
I'd listen to both.
I'm not familiar with Prince, but I heard the song.
You're not familiar
like,
with Prince?
I'm not.
We're doing a podcast about Prince. In
He's going to
be
Chris
the outcast.
Yeah.
That's fine. No, I feel Danny Elfman's score is heroic, romantic, sweeping, bombastic. Like, whenever Batman drops through a ceiling and that music kicks in, it's like, oh my gosh, someone's about to get their butt handed to him.
I remember being a kid and the movie ending and the ending credits were coming up and that theme was reprised. I was like 7 years old and I was so like inspired and excited. I ran up the aisle to the exit of the theater, like pretending to be Batman with this huge music behind me, imagining my cape billowing behind me. It was so moving.
You got beat up so much as a kid.
You know, surprisingly enough, I rarely got punched.
Oh, that's good.
Because you could outrun him.
You put that soundtrack on, you just go. No, you're
good
right.
Runner.
One thing I did want to bring up that was actually something fairly controversial about this was Batman's use of guns and explosives.
Yeah, it's messed up.
There's something else I want to talk about.
Because obviously the Batmobile had the Gatling guns he used to blow open the door.
Yeah.
The Batwing had guns. He was actually actively
trying to kill the Joker.
The Batmobile drops a bomb
in
the middle
chemical
of the factory.
It takes off.
You know,
nuts.
You know, that's... Well, let's go on and talk about that. So I watched this movie, thanks to Mark, right before we recorded this. And there's
cheating. I
gotta
go off memory.
You gotta go off memory. You gotta go off drunken memory.
You got it fresh.
There's a moment at the end of the film when he's chased the Joker up to the top of the cathedral, and Batman grabs him, and he like brings him right to his face, and he's like, I'm gonna kill you. And I paused the movie, and I rewound it, and I was like, oh my gosh. Like, it just really stood out as a stark contrast to what Batman is. And my question is, had they already established at this point that Batman didn't use guns or kill people?
At the time this movie came out, yeah.
Okay.
It was pretty much already canon that Batman doesn't use guns.
And it had been canon
for a long time. The earliest Batman in the 40s, the first few years, he actually, had a gun, and he would use it a few times.
Yeah.
And he actually killed a few people. I think we discussed it previously.
Yeah.
But yeah, that changed. That didn't make it into the 60s even. Mm-hmm. And then definitely by the 80s, it was very much, you know, he had this code. He wouldn't kill people. Never used a gun. The Batman the comic books. He went to the FBI Academy and passed everything with an A, basically, except for the firearms, because he hated them.
Huh. I'm curious as to why they would go to the effort to reinvent Batman and make him darker, but then not give him the code.
I think a little bit of that was Burton. I think he was touching into that 1930s, 40s Batman, that old, and he was trying to bring some of the old and some of the new, bring it together. It's Burton. He always does his own thing, and I think that's really where it came from, was him just, he liked elements. He's like, well, I'm not going to have Batman actually kill somebody, but I'm going to have the guns because I get the effect. And it was those big, you know, kind of 1940s Gatling guns, you know.
Joel, I saw you laughing over there.
I think that
killing people is cool.
I'm joking. Honestly, that's one of the reasons why I'm probably not much of a Batman fan.
Oh, really?
Because he doesn't kill people.
Because he doesn't have the balls.
I respect the code completely fine. That's perfectly fine, but
So you're a Dexter fan.
Well, I am a Dexter fan.
You like the Punisher?
You like the Punisher.
I've never really read much of the Punisher either, to be honest with you.
But you don't like that Batman will not use lethal force.
If it needs to be used, then you use it. Mm. But
his entire opinion and philosophy is it never needs to be used. There's always another way.
Which is his philosophy, which is fine as I have as a philosophy. I just don't agree with it, which is probably why I'm
big Batman fan.
I'm not much of a fan, but
and that's always one of the things I've found that fascinating is that his, you know, strict adherence to this code, and he's fully aware that criminals like the Joker, mm-hmm. if he were to kill the Joker, it would end that issue. Mm-hmm. He knows that the Joker will always find a way to escape. Mm-hmm. He'll always have to deal with it, but he can never lower himself to that level. He has to be the example. Mm-hmm. He has to stay above it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's always one of the things I've respected highly about the character of Batman, is that he is very morally strong. And, you know, it's actually, in many ways, you know, something to aspire to. Just, you know, human, you know, try to be that better person. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, he's out there slugging it out in the sewers with, you know, bad guys. Mm-hmm. Don't want to do that on a nightly basis. But, you know, somebody's got to stand up and not cross the line.
Hmm. Andrew, what's up?
I just think he's a pussy.
Well, in this movie, he's using guns.
He's awesome.
You know what I've never understood? Is how does he miss the Joker? When he's shooting all of his weapons at the Batwing.
Because he programmed into the computer for never to kill somebody, so the computer was autocorrect.
Had a moral code not to...
That or it was the same basic manufacturer who made Stormtrooper rifles for Star Wars.
So. All right. Mm. He needs to get that Joker handgun, because that thing's really effective.
I just thought his weapons were cooler, because he had the Batwing, the little Chinese throwing star. Little bats.
Batarang.
So I just thought, I never thought much about his code until the Christopher Nolan stuff, because it seemed like that was such a bigger deal. Mm-hmm. So I never really thought of that. I always just thought he'd used better and cooler and funner things.
I mean, don't get me wrong. He'll break somebody's arm and a leg and a hurt, you know, without thinking about it. But
What's funny is they do stick with the code for the animated series, which would come out just a few years after this. But we'll talk about that in a moment.
Yeah, I was just going to make a joke about Batman accidentally killing people through breaking their bones.
Yeah.
You know, one of those hilarious bits.
Punctured an artery.
I didn't know you were a hemophiliac. I'm sorry. Oh.
I just want to say two things that stand out to me in this movie. The cathedral at the end that they climb up.
Possibly tall
70-story cathedral. I love the design of that. It's like Tim Burton, like, just going crazy.
Yeah.
He's like, oh my gosh, they have to walk up a cathedral. And the Batmobile. That design for the Batmobile is great.
It's so good. With the armor that just comes up, like the aperture or iris of a camera.
Yep.
One thing about the cathedral, I read Burton's book, Burton on Burton, where it's I think it's a series of interviews where he talks about his different films and the process and stuff like that. And when he was shooting Batman, apparently the script wasn't fleshed out for the cathedral bit, getting them from the ground to the top where the helicopter picks them up, and so Burton's directing the scene and he's like, okay, Jack Nicholson, grab Vicki Vale and take her up the cathedral, and Nicholson goes, "Why are we going up these stairs?" And Burton said, we'll know when we get there. Like, I'm making this up as we go along. And it kind of makes sense. If you're going to get picked up by your goons, why does it have to be the tallest building in the world? Why not the top of a 4-story hospital where they have a helipad?
Yeah, well. He had to get to the church on time.
He did.
That's, yeah.
Because it had to be sort of...
Thank you for taking us back to the 1960s with that pump. That was great.
It's in the movie.
It is.
It's in the movie.
It had to be a sort of vampire-y, gothic sort of environment.
Well, that is the 1989 Batman. And then a few years later, in 1992, we would be given Batman Returns. Andrew looks happy. Which would introduce us to Danny DeVito as the Penguin. Gosh, what's his name? I'm totally blanking on his name.
Christopher Walken as Max Schreck.
Christopher Walken as Max Schreck. And Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman. She's cool. Selina Kyle in the movie, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Assistant to Max Schreck.
I saw this in the theaters too and thought it was great.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it.
It was a good Christmas movie.
It does take place at Christmas. Yes.
It was way more Burton-y stylized than the first one.
Oh, yeah.
Was.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember thinking it was darker.
I didn't think it was as dark. I thought it was actually lighter in many ways. Hmm.
Explain.
Well, I just felt like the Penguin and Max Schreck's characters, because they were really the villains, were just not as threatening or as evil as like the Joker was in the previous Batman movie. I just felt, it was a continuation, but I felt like they were missing some of that dark edginess. And
do you feel it's darker, Mark, because the Penguin kind of comes off as a more tragic character? Like, not loved by his parents, thrown into the sewers, trying to fit back in, but is really, like, a vile little creature?
I think that might be part of it, because the film starts with the parents abandoning a child in the sewers. That's pretty messed up.
It's Pee-wee Herman, isn't it?
Yeah. But, I mean, maybe I feel that way because visually a lot of the things you see in this film are kind of disturbing. Like, Joker's gang was a bunch of dudes in black clothes with fedoras. Mm. And Penguin's gang are these circus freaks and, like, a fat, grotesque man and weird-looking people. And there's, like, a dude with a skull helmet on breathing fire in the streets. And the Penguin himself is gross with his stringy hair and the leather gloves that are just creepy. And then at the end, when he's, dying or whatever, he's oozing this green-black liquid from his mouth. Just like, ugh.
It's that aside, I thought that they were bringing in some of those cheesy elements from the 1960s Batman. Like, when they were kidnapping all the kids in Gotham, they've got that silly little, like, circus train they're using.
Yeah, true.
Some of the same circus freak henchmen they're using, they got was the woman with the poodle or whatever that jumps up and grabs Batman's batarang out of the air.
How the hell is a poodle going to take out the batarang?
He's got the penguins with the missiles on their backs.
Exactly. So at the same time, the Penguin and some of the aspects could be kind of dark and gritty. They were doing some of the super cheesy stuff that was almost a throwback to the Adam West Batman.
He had like a bat boat he took through the sewers.
Yeah.
The bat sewer boat. I don't know if it could actually work on the ocean.
And half the
I think
time,
he needed walls.
Yeah.
And half the time when the Penguin wasn't trying to manipulate Max Schreck or something, he was just trying to get in Michelle Pfeiffer's pants.
Yeah, he was a real hornball.
Yeah.
Like, real gross.
Living in the sewer.
I'm kind of glad they didn't make him like the 1960s Penguin, like this really well-to-do socialite society man. I like that he's this grotesque creature. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a creature. I will admit, like, I feel there's no one in this film that challenges Batman like the Joker did.
No.
Like, Batman is kind of dealing with several things in this film.
Yep.
Whereas the Joker was such a big issue in the first one, he had to deal with that. But the Penguin, it's strange. Penguin wants to run for office. Catwoman, what does she want
to
do?
Wants
this?
She wants revenge. Max Schreck and to steal shit and mess stuff up.
Max Schreck, I guess, wants political power.
Yeah, nobody, like, Joker was, I'm going to kill the Gothamites with my Joker products, and then Batman is stopping him. I'm going to kill Batman. I'm going to lure him into a trap by throwing out free money and kill all these people. And Penguin, he was looking for power, and Batman was an obstacle there was never like, I want to kill everybody, and Batman is getting in the way. Now, I guess at the end he had the revenge plot of like, I'm going to kill all the firstborn children.
No.
Mm-hmm. But still, that's not as widespread as like everyone who buys shampoo is going to die.
Yep.
Joel, Andrew, did you guys see this? Have you?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I don't want to spoil the Catwoman discussion.
But oh, well, yeah. Let's go into the Catwoman discussion.
Oh, God. I mean, I just...
Because she's a huge player in the film, and right. I like her way more than Vicki Vale, and I love, like... There's this one scene where they're, like, both having dinner, and she gets a call to go commit a crime or something, and he gets a call to go stop a crime, mm-hmm. and they both have to, like, find reasons why to bail on the day, and they both tell Alfred, like, hey... I gotta go be a superhero or whatever. And he's like, okay.
Yeah.
Master Wayne, whatever.
This is a weird thing to like, but I really liked the montage of her putting together her costume.
Yeah.
I can't remember the song that was playing over it, but it was great.
I remember her death.
Yeah.
Her death was really creepy when he pushes her out the window and the camera just like falls with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Am I remembering this right?
Well, that's when she,
yeah. And then she becomes Catwoman.
Mm-hmm. And she's like twitching back to life and she's mm-hmm. so pale.
Yeah. It was creepy.
Yeah.
It was Tim Burton-y for sure.
That's That's another moment like the I see myself in the mirror, I'm hideous, I'm insane now. That's like, I got pushed out a window, but all these cats licked me back to life, and now now apparently I can take a bunch of bullets and not die. Yep. Like this supernatural quality.
She can take 9 bullets.
Right. Like you were talking about the montage of her making the cat suit. I think that's really cool because it's like this artistic frenzy. Like she's a new woman. She's reborn, and now she's not mousy little Selina Kyle. She's catty Catwoman, and she bashes the fluorescent lights in her apartment so it says hell here, and she goes on like a creation frenzy where she's like making her new skin. And it's really cool, like, you know, in terms of the character, seeing Catwoman do an interesting activity, but also sort of like, oh yeah, we've all felt inspired from time to time
to make our own cat suit.
No, I mean, we've all felt inspired and wanted to like do something right away and like, I gotta get this done, I wanna do this. And that's kind of a neat little arts and craftsy moment, which I think speaks a lot to Burton's kind of inner artist.
Mm.
At least that's what I'm projecting onto it.
How many superhero suits have you made at home? Just out of curiosity.
Define suit.
Outfits, something you were planning on fighting crime.
I've got a lot of gauntlets I've built.
What are her claws made of? I remember like when she's putting the claws on, that really stood out to me. Is it something from a sewing kit?
Yeah, some sort of like.
Were they thimbles?
No, because like they're pointed. There's something on there.
But it is thimbly. They fit over the fingers. I don't know.
Might have been part of a sewing machine. You
know? Well, I feel like Bruce Wayne's attempt to like reach out to her and redeem her and like maybe attempt to be with her is so much better than what he tries to do with Vicki Vale in the first one. Do you guys like her better than Vicki Vale or?
Yeah, as far as the romantic lead, I don't know how crazy I ever was about her in that movie. It was fine. I just always felt it was just a little weird and at times forced.
Hmm.
Yeah, I like that they say, we're cut from the same cloth. We're two sides, or we're, you know, split down the middle. Selina Kyle, as Catwoman, is definitely a creature of Batman's world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this secret identity, this wild, action-filled nightlife. And Vicki Vale can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the comics, at least in the modern comics, there's this thing where Batman is always attracted to Catwoman because she gets him as Batman. It's not just like Bruce Wayne's next heiress who he's dating. She's like, she does what he does. She does what he loves, or at least that he's committed to.
Then there's Christopher Walken. This is actually the movie that introduced me to Christopher Walken. Like, I had not seen anything else of his prior to this. And then I was like, oh, it's that guy. Later on, it's like, oh, it's the guy from Batman Returns.
It's really part of me. I wish he would have brought a little bit of that Deer Hunter character in here. Two more bullets.
Yeah, he's slimy. He's creepy. He's scheming.
He's the bad guy.
Yeah. And his grand scheme is to steal Gotham's electricity by building a capacitor instead of a generator.
That's basically like a Mr. Burns block out the sun kind of grand scheme. Yeah,
it's really silly.
Yeah,
I don't remember that.
Yeah,
that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess I should watch this movie again.
It's worth watching just for his hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got crazy hair in that one, which is embellished upon when he meets his untimely end and gets zapped and the hair gets all big. And
now, was that hair they gave him or was that just Christopher Walken's hair?
It's hard to say. His hair is always a little crazy. I mean, if you watch his early movies especially.
It's whatever it wants to do. All right.
I mean, his hair is different in like everything. I think Batman Returns was probably only like a year or two after he did like one of those, was like, not Gangs of New York, but there was one where he was playing like a modern day crime lord in New York. It was one of those like dark, gritty, like Mario Van Peebles was in it, but like, you know, had drugs shooting people up, kind of along the lines of like a New Jack City. It's like he was doing so many weird movies and weird roles at that time.
Yeah. If the shoe fits.
Yeah, this movie they also attempt to frame Batman and make him a villain.
Yeah.
Which I think they succeed at for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then he is able to clear his own name. But that really stood out to me when I saw it as, oh, that's a great idea. Like, this guy's so easy to frame. He goes around dressed up as a bat beating
super
people
scary.
Up. I mean, that's questionable. Maybe we should arrest him. And then they frame him. And it's like, oh, yeah, maybe he would kill someone by pushing them onto a Christmas tree or whatever.
Yeah, happens. And releasing a bunch of bats.
Crazy. I love that happens. And they're like, oh, Batman killed her so he could release his bats. It's
You know, I didn't think much of it as a kid when I saw this in the theaters, but as an adult, I am troubled by the murder of the Ice Princess or the Ice Queen, whatever, like the beauty pageant girl is. Mm-hmm. You know, that she's portrayed as a two-dimensional character. She's like a dumb bimbo and thinks the Penguin is a talent scout.
It's easier to kill her that way.
Yeah, but it still bothers me, like, that there's this woman who's excited to do this thing, and then she is murdered. She's thrown off a building and crashes into this, you know, thing, which is supposed to be a happy festival. Like, it just feels wrong to me.
Would you have felt better had cats come along and licked her back to hell?
Yeah.
There's two women who get knocked out of buildings in this.
What if the bats had licked her and she'd become Batwoman?
Oh...
They were vampire bats.
What?
Wow.
Joel, Andrew, how are you guys doing?
I wish it was like a mouse that licked her or something. Where she just like crawled around the rest of the movie.
She's a mouse girl.
Yeah.
I got the powers of a mouse.
She
this
walks
sucks.
Up and all of her fingers are entrapped.
Mice, come on!
What happened?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what it is with Tim Burton pushing women out of windows.
I think it's subconscious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so.
I think he thinks they deserve it. Which they don't. All right.
Well, we're coming along to the hour mark, and we still haven't touched upon everything I wanted to. Is there anything else you guys want to say about Batman Returns?
No.
Yes. Real quick.
Hold on. Before we get to you. Andrew, Joel, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Is there anything you want to say? You both have seen Batman Returns.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Joel hates Batman, so...
I did not. Okay,
I'm kidding.
But anyway,
I'm kidding.
I mean, I really love this movie for Catwoman. I loved Meow and the Explosion. I love Saved by Kitty Litter. I love all those times. I loved everything about that movie because of her.
The bullwhip?
Yeah, exactly. And I loved her face every time she found out that someone was watching her. It was just like, oh, shit, now this. Like, when she does all the backflips and comes up, there's like... a little bit of a moment where she's just kind of looking at everybody being like, how much shit am I actually in right now, you know? So I thought that was just a fun thing.
I remember when she falls into kitty litter and is just like overjoyed. She's like, I was saved by kitty litter. I love it. I'm going to take a bath right here. And she starts, whatever. Do you like this movie better than the first one?
Well, I think so. But I didn't like... I didn't really like the Penguin. I mean, I like what he did now, but I remember watching it for the first time. I didn't like that kind of performance, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it grew on me over time, but I definitely loved it for Catwoman, for sure.
Cool. Joel?
I don't really have one way or the other, honestly, on this one. So,
okay. I have something to say.
Pat, what about you?
The movie, no, I'm good.
You good? Yeah. Do you like it better than the first one, or you like
no,
the first
I like
one?
The first one better.
Okay. Mark, do you have something to say?
Oh, yes, I do. An interesting thing that's dealt with in this movie is feminism. So, you know, there's a part when Batman and Catwoman are fighting, and he decks her, and she goes, "How could you? I'm a woman." And he goes, "I'm sorry." And then she, like, sucker punches him or kicks him or something. And that's like, yeah, like, you didn't see a lot of female villains get knocked around by the superhero back then. And it's something that, you know, was addressed. It's like, yes, women can be bad guys, too. Women can fight. Women can be violent. And if you're in a fight with a woman who wants to, you know, scratch your eyes out, mm-hmm. you can punch her. And it's problematic because it's not very chivalrous. It seems dishonorable. But Batman, like, has to do what he needs to do to protect the city. And part of that is protecting himself from getting killed. And so there's, like, this sexist idea, like, oh, I'm not allowed to harm a woman. Now it sounds like I'm defending the... woman beating.
Yeah.
And I am.
I'm not getting involved
in this at all.
I'm not gonna edit that.
I saw you hit a little girl on the way over here.
Well, she was so little.
She was a girl.
How often does that come up? Yeah, and so, you know, like the cops, Catwoman blows up the department store, and the security guard's like, I don't know whether to shoot her or fall in love. You know, like, there's a whole lot of, like, she objectifying her, but then there's her kind of striking back and being like, fuck you, boys. You're enchanted by my skin-tight suit, but I have authority and I have strength and I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm not at the mercy of... Batman. I'm not going to let Bruce Wayne tell me what to do. I'm going to be my own person and leave the date early to go do my crazy heists.
She's not really a thief that much in this movie, is she? She's more trying to get the revenge.
Yeah. Like an anarchist.
Yeah. Okay.
You want to speed through the cartoons?
Man, we're at the hour mark.
Double long episode.
No, we can't double long. Here's what we've got. We've got 9 minutes... to talk about just the animated series.
Well, I think we can just speed through all of them, hit some highlights real quick.
All right, let's talk about the animated series, right. Which came out in 1992.
Which was awesome.
Okay, real quick, can you clarify the different animated series that there were?
Batman the Animated Series was the one that was super stylized, like that noir kind of look with the blimps came over, the spotlights
came out. I watched that one, and then I saw a lot of Nightwing. I think was a newer one, right?
Batman Beyond.
Okay.
Takes place in the future.
Right. Okay, yes. So that I know. Mm-hmm. How important are those in the overall animated series canon comparatively to other...
They're pretty important. Well,
are they two of the larger ones?
They were very, very well received.
And they kind of started DC's whole animated lineup.
Because Batman the Animated Series, on the success of that, they did the Superman one, similar art style and stuff, and then that fed into the Justice League cartoons.
Which was a big hit.
The Batman Beyond, though, was still some of the same people working out. That was pretty much, I don't think there was any comics before that. That was a strict TV creation.
That was a strictly innovation for television, yeah. Which was
which
very
set
well
off
received.
In the future. So they could do their own thing. They weren't restricted by the canon. They were just trying to base around like everything Batman come before.
Was that right that he was Nightwing, or was that a thing?
No,
he's not Nightwing. Okay. He's a newer Batman.
Nightwing did make an appearance in the final couple seasons of Batman the Animated Series.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and Nightwing was
Dick Grayson.
The original Robin.
Robin grown up.
Okay.
In the comic books, Robin, the first Robin, Dick Grayson, moves on, becomes his own superhero, and then there's actually some subsequent Robins. That's not always covered in the cartoons and movies.
Bring Tim Drake into the... as a new Robin into the animated series. But let's talk about the animated series. Really quick, the animated series aired from 1992 to 1995 and kind of took its cue off of the Batman films that had just come out. They even actually use part of Danny Elfman's theme. It's very, very light. It's only like 2 measures or whatnot, but they do use his music as inspiration. I don't know if you told this to me, Mark, but I heard this somewhere where this is one of the only shows where rather than paint and color on a white sheet of paper, they would paint in color on a black sheet of paper, mm-hmm. to keep the style and keep it very dark and make the show very, very dark and atmospheric. So the show is very stylized. It had this very, very dark film noir detective.
Which is one of the things I enjoyed, because that's an aspect of Batman that's often lost, especially in the movies, is Batman is the world's greatest detective.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, they do it in the comic books, but yeah, fortunately, Batman the Animated Series really hit on that. They hit on some really good storylines as well. Mm-hmm. They actually got into some deep, you know, stuff, like with Harvey Dent and stuff.
Mr. Freeze. Yeah. All the villains in this show.
Some of their deeper, you know, the reasons behind them. That they're, you know, unlike the Joker, who's like more or less just an anarchist, some of them are actually, you know, doing evil things because of their own misguided, you know, whatever they're trying to accomplish.
Clayface.
Yeah.
Like, a thing about Batman the Animated Series, and I think this does this even more than the Batman films, the Burton films, is it really is not afraid to touch on, like, a tragic victim-villain story. Yeah. Clayface is a tragic story. Mr. Freeze. Mm-hmm. Like, that character was a campy gimmick bad guy for the longest time, and they transformed him into this heartbroken scientist
who just save his wife.
Yeah, he just wanted his wife to live again and not be diseased. Mm-hmm. And, like, for ostensibly a children's show, that was really deep.
They were pretty consistent with continuity and storylines and episodes, plot lines being referred to from previous seasons and later seasons.
Hardak. I am Hardak.
That's
the bad computer.
And this show gave us Kevin Conroy as Batman, who went on to play Batman, still is playing Batman to this day, as far as I know. He played him in this, Batman Beyond, Justice League, Justice League Unlimited, several of the movies.
He's several of the video games.
He is essentially the voice of Batman.
VOB.
Yeah. And Mark Hamill, a.k.a. Luke Skywalker, as the Joker.
Batman?
Who... Ooh, nice.
Thank you.
You've been waiting to say that.
I love Mark Hamill.
God, you sound like an alien. Really happy.
I am pregnant with an alien baby. See episode one.
I love Mark Hamill's interpretation of the Joker.
So good.
What do you guys think of the show? What do you think as far as maybe the voice cast goes?
You guys familiar with it at all? Or?
I'm not that not much. So
no, I mean the voice cast is phenomenal, but I mean I think it just accented great stories and just great voice performances and animation just all around. I mean the animated series was just it was a good show. It really was a great. It basically took the best of what the comics were and put them in on the TV screen.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you got rid of some of the BS that, you know, sometimes comics have almost as filler and just gave you great half-hour little episodes. And sometimes they do multi-part episodes. And like you said, they would grow, they would build on each season, introduce new characters like, you know, Tim Drake. They would have Nightwing.
This is a show that I kind of watched it when I was a kid. Like, anytime it would come on, I'd catch it after school. I think it usually came on at like 4 or 5 in the afternoon where I lived. And I would watch it. I didn't get to follow it as much because just what was going on in my life at the time with the war. I don't know.
the war on drugs?
But anytime it would come on, I'd be like, oh, Batman. And I definitely watched it out of order. This recently, I recently acquired the first two seasons.
The Body of the Joker.
And some of it is on Netflix. And I rewatched it. And yeah, this show... Man, it holds up.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's like I still feel it's probably some of the best of the DC animated line. It's just
Andrew,
so good.
Joel, our recommendation for you is watch Batman the Animated Series.
Okay. Yeah, the first two seasons especially. I have a problem with the later seasons because they changed their style of animation, and to me it looked a lot flatter and a lot cheaper.
There are still some great episodes in those seasons.
Yeah,
like, really
good spectacular good storytelling, but yeah, they did definitely change the art approach. And the first two, it definitely has that more noir kind of thing going on that's really good. It's very stylized.
Did you say you have watched this, Andrew?
Yeah. It was kind of a part of my after-school cartoon intake, but I think it was one of those things where it was like sometimes I saw it, sometimes I didn't, so I never watched it as a serial. I always watched it as like a full season. I just kind of watched each episode and didn't really think of how it related too much.
Anybody, we're running super short on time here, but I did want to mention maybe a few key episodes. What are you making that weird clock?
I have three things to say. Number one, in Batman the Animated Series, I feel it's the best treatment of Harvey Dent transforming into Two-Face. They give him a split personality disorder. And he has his two-faced personality before he's even deformed. And I think that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Even in the latest Nolan movie, which we're not supposed to talk, or the second latest, it's like, oh, I'm burnt up, so I'm crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, that's bull. And this Two-Face had psychological problems before the accident. The accident just...
Let him out.
Yeah, it let him release those. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think we talked about, there was also the episode where he was, you know, they had a plastic surgeon, was able to reconstruct his face, and he was, you know, working with therapists and stuff to become sane again. And he, I forgot what happened, but something happened that, like, some other criminals are attacking him, messing with him, and he kind of, like, snapped again, but he, like, was looking at himself in the mirror and couldn't see the corrected side of his face, and he, like, ended up, I think, mutilating his face again.
I've seen that in a comic.
Yeah, I've seen that somewhere,
because they've done it. It's been in the show and also the comic, but there were some minor differences, and I could be confusing the two. But.
Bruce Wayne is also a friend of Harvey in the series, which they kind of touch on in the Nolan film, but not very much. Like, he's more of an acquaintance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in this show, he's a friend, and he feels genuinely responsible for what's happened to Harvey and wants to help him. The Harvey stuff is great.
So good.
There's an episode called Almost Got Him.
Yes.
Which is the, I think it's the Harvey Dent, Killer Croc, Poison Ivy,
and
the
Penguin Joker.
And Joker all sitting around a card table talking about how they almost got Batman, how they almost killed him. And it's their stories, and then at the end...
I threw a rock at him!
at the end, Batman is actually there, and he's trying to arrest all of them. But it's a really, really great, really great standalone episode. If you want to see why this show is so good.
There was a good one, I think it was probably one of the later seasons of it, where it was like three kids like telling their interpretation of Batman.
Yes,
It ended up being like these three little vignettes that were takes on like classic comics. Like, one was actually like the Dark Knight Returns kind of, you know, done as the cartoon. And then I forgot the other ones, but it was some other classic storylines or, you know, from these alternate... So that was kind of cool. They were incorporating some of these other Batman comics and takes on Batman within the show.
Just to touch on two other episodes. There's an episode where a no-name loser,
Sid
the Squid, effectively kills Batman, or everyone thinks he kills Batman, and everyone is out to get him, from Rupert Thorne to the Joker, because everyone is either pissed that he actually killed Batman, or is like insulted that he is the one who did it. Oh. And there's this great monologue that the Joker gives as to why his life has been ruined now because of this man. That episode is great. And the only other one I really want to mention is there's an episode called Mad Love, where Harley, in desperation to prove her love to the Joker, captures Batman and like has succeeded in capturing him and is ready to kill him, but wants the Joker to see it. So the Joker shows up and he's so pissed that she has done what he has never been able to do. And it's great. This is a really good show. It's so good.
It's funny. Like, Joker pulls Batman down. He's like, I'm sorry about this.
Can we just forget about all this?
She doesn't know what she's doing.
The greatest part is, like, he's actually, like, leaving almost to the door, and he stops. He's like, wait a minute, what the hell am I doing? He turns around, and
right.
At that point, Batman's had a chance to recover, and he tells him, like, you know, she had me. He's like, the blood was rushing to my head. There wasn't anything I could do.
Yeah.
I was done. And he's like, you're the one that just let me go.
He's like, damn it!
So here's my two other quick things. Number one, Mark Hamill got the role of the Joker, and previously he had played Amadeus on stage on Broadway. And a deal with that play is the character is supposed to have this annoying laugh that pierces the party. And so to keep it fresh, he would change his laugh every night. Sometimes he'd be more like a donkey, sometimes higher. And so he had this whole arsenal of different kinds of laughs. And so when he was doing the Joker, he would like score the laughs and say, oh, there can be a laugh that's menacing, that crescendos. There can be a laugh that's just wild and unabashed. There can be a laugh that's a childish little giggle. And so instead of just... like the Jack Nicholson, ha 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 ha, all the time, he had all these dynamics, which really was cool, and it showed more of the character's psychology.
Speaking of Mark Hamill, I saw an interview with him where he was talking about his audition for the animated series, and he originally auditioned and was hoping to get like Mr. Freeze or a side character, and he got a callback for the Joker, and he, at least in the interview I saw, he was upset with that because his first thought was, I'm Luke Skywalker. They're never going to go for it.
Yeah.
They're never going to buy me as the Joker. Why am I being called back for it? And of course, I mean, he got it. And He's played it for 20 years.
Yeah. He was Francis Boyle in the Heart of Ice episode who kicks Mr. Freeze into the stuff that makes him Mr. Freeze. And he was like, oh, I really want to come back. Okay, my final thing.
Final
thought. I'm not going to give it up. They were considering Tim Curry for the role of Joker.
Oh, yeah, I did hear about that.
But he had just finished Peter Pan and the Pirates, an animated series, and he was Captain Hook. And so they felt like, oh, it's too similar to the last thing he did. But that would have been a totally different Joker.
Adam West also does a voice on this show.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, as a character, or playing an actor who was a renowned actor in the 60s, but then couldn't get work because he was well known for that one character.
The Grey Ghost!
We're well over an hour now. I've got to stop it. I feel like we could talk about the animated series. We didn't get to touch about Batman Beyond.
In part three of the Batman podcast series.
Well, make it part four.
Part four. A four-parter.
Quadrilogy.
That's right.
That's a word Fox made up to sell the Alien set. So any final thoughts on the things we've talked about? I know we didn't get through everything. Sorry for those who wanted us to talk about the video games. We didn't get to it.
What a pod tease.
I know. any final thoughts on some of the Batman stuff we've talked on tonight? Final thoughts.
Batman in the media, even more than the comics, because I wasn't a huge comic reader as a kid, but in Batman in the animated series, the Batman movies were a big influence on me as a kid and just totally captured my imagination. And they're probably the reason why I'm still a Batman fan today. They're very influential to me.
No, and I agree. It was really the Batman animated series was probably what got me reading Batman comic books, because before that I wasn't reading many DC comic books, and it really got me reading it. And that's why the character of Batman is just great. And yeah, those cartoons, they definitely hit it spot on, matched the comic, the tone of the comic book, the character. And so I've loved him ever since. And then especially the later movies that we're not allowed to talk about in this podcast continued that as well.
All right. Andrew, Joel?
I just want to say that as a kid, I used to have pajamas, Batman pajamas that had wings on them.
Well,
my brother had that one, and I had Transformers. But then when he grew out of that, I got the Batman. Batman was cooler because it had the cutout and everything. So, man, I love those pajamas
so
much.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Were they based on like the movies or the show or?
No, I mean it was just basically black pajamas with wings on them.
What?
You know, which is pretty awesome.
That is awesome. Did it have a cowl?
No, okay. Anything like that. But we lived in a 3-step ranch, so we used to always, of course, jump down and on top of each other when the other one was walking, trying to take the other down. So mostly it was him jumping on me.
Silent takedown.
Joel?
Wow, I don't really have much to add, aside from the fact that my nephew, who is 4, just celebrated his birthday, and he got the whole Batman suit along with the cowl.
Oh,
nice.
Whole shebang.
Like armor? Like, is it?
No, it's like armor, but it's like PJs with the bat, with the cape and the cowl and all that kind of stuff. I think it's interesting how that, as all of you have kind of stated, how it evolved, and we've seen Batman evolve in the media, and how that. And now that we take it back, when we look back at it now, how that has influenced part of our lives, I think is a very interesting idea. I'm done now.
All right. Before we sign off here, does anybody have any other shows that they want to plug or any other podcasts or things that they're doing? I don't know when this is specifically going to air, so if you've got something not time sensitive, that would be great. Mark, I know you do another podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to plug that podcast?
Yeah. Before I plug it, I want to just mention that if you watch Batman the Animated Series, it looks like they have big shoulders, but they could also just have tiny heads. I just ruined it for everyone. So if you like horribly ruined childhood memories, I have a podcast which is a fake science real comedy podcast called Blastro Podcast. I also write for and act for a science fiction podcast called Our Fair City. And I know time sensitivity, but on the off chance that this airs before July 4th, if you are in Minneapolis the weekend of July 4th and you go to the comic book convention called Convergence, I will be performing a live show with Our Fair City. So come check it out. It is called the Archibald Funny Pants Variety Hour.
Cool.
You want to plug it, or
Andrew? You look like you were about to say
go,
something.
Andrew.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'd like to plug a very important show, and that is a sketch show with the group This Side of Witty.
Woo!
When is it going?
Chris Bashan and Patrick Sweet and myself.
Hey, I know that group.
A few other
if you're
people.
In the Chicago area.
If you're in the Chicago area between the months of August and January, maybe February.
2013 into 2014.
Yeah, there's a really good chance that somewhere from downtown to like 5,000 north,
we may be doing a show.
We're putting on a sketch show maybe anywhere from Wednesdays to Sunday nights or Sunday days.
We have a website that is
currently
down.
But when it's
we
up,
really
it's
do have a sketch
show.
By the time you listen to this, it may be live again. Thissideofwitty.com.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess just really pay attention to what's going on in the city whenever you're down here every day, and maybe you can see us do funny things.
Cool. Joel, do you have anything you wish to plug?
Nope, I'm good.
All right, great. If you have any comments, questions, protests, or thoughts about other topics you'd like to hear, feel free to email at nerdoutcastpodcast@gmail.com. We take suggestions. And if you saw this on iTunes, please give us a rating. A higher rating is great. Helps listenership or whatever you wish to call it. Please tell your friends if you enjoyed the show. And yeah, that is all I've got. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming out tonight. I have been your host, Chris Bashan, and my guests tonight have been
Mark Soloff,
Andrew Kudla,
Joel Thompson,
Patrick Sweetman.
Thank you and good night.